With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Wait a minute. Wait. Episode 499.
This is 499.
Wow. Yeah. That actually means, here's the reminder, here's the heads up. Friday, we will have episode 500 of this podcast, and it will not be available Friday morning because we are doing it as a live stream Friday afternoon. It'll be 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, live streaming on YouTube with audio from the board that you're hearing right now. So we will be live streaming. We'll be taking questions. We're going to be talking about, many of you have already sent in. We love this. Many of you have sent in your emails about your favorite podcast episodes and why there are a lot.
Yeah, this
so
is cool.
That's really cool to have that. We will be talking about the show in general at large, taking questions, car and non-questions. It's going to be really, really cool. There's so much coming for that. I don't even know how long it's going to be. I really don't. We're just going to start and go.
10 hours later, our voices are shot. We're croaking.
We've each taken separate bathroom and food breaks.
Exactly.
We're going to keep going. No, it's not going to be like that.
We just order pizza. Mm-hmm. It's delivered while we're live streaming. All right. Well, guys, welcome back to the podcast. Massive thanks to our season 6 sponsors. You've heard it before. Covercraft is our presenting sponsor for season 6.
Yeah.
Big thanks to them and Griot's Garage, Car Care, and Haggerty. Hope you've gotten a chance to hear the Haggerty interview. Hopefully, we're going to plan on getting Nick from Griot's Garage back on the podcast shortly.
Not promising
anything yet because it's just, we're still trying to figure out schedules right now.
Totally,
everybody's really busy, but we're wanting to get him back on and somebody from Covercraft too. So, yeah, thanks to those sponsors. And you can use the code EVERYDAY for 10% off. And now at Griot's Garage, you can get 15% off liquids and 10% off everything else, which is cool.
The discount with the everyday code, the code hasn't changed, still everyday, but with that discount code, if you're buying a liquid, it's now 15% off, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, very generous.
They're being generous to us and to you guys. We will also be giving away something from Griot's during the podcast 500. We're still figuring out. Here's how that'll probably work. It'll probably work where we're going to do the thing on Instagram and Facebook where it's guess the mileage.
Well, we're going to do
while we're podcasting. Yeah. So that'll be when we introduce that. That'll happen for that cool giveaway. There's a lot coming. We're still shooting season 7. In fact, we will have just gotten back from a season 7 shoot when we do podcast 5.
Yeah.
We are cramming it into this whole week. It's really exciting.
It's starting to get busy. Yeah. Everything you and I have been talking about that has been in the planning mode is now starting to come to fruition. So we're very excited about that. And we've got a really interesting topic Tuesday that is a question from 86 Croissant, Deca Tars.
Got it. Yep.
That's the handle. And he or she, we're not sure, asks about cars that you forgot existed or never knew about, or it could be the most obscure cars too. And you can put your own rules to it. You can do whatever you want. You could have gone all the way back to, you know, the Alvas from, you know, the 30s or 40s.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
It just, I had a little bit of my own rules and interestingly,
you had your own rules.
The
we
ones
will
that
also
came
wind up,
up
very different. I have no doubt.
We'll I think
wind
so.
Up on totally different lists.
Funny enough, the ones that came most to my mind were forgotten for a reason, funny enough, because I'm looking at my list. I'm like, I blocked that out of my memory for a reason. And they were mostly from growing up because when I was so into cars, I mean, I kind of am now.
It has continued, yes.
But as it was, I guess, developing early childhood, all the cars that I started to notice, you know, the headlights and taillights and design and all this stuff, it kind of comes from all that. So it's kind of interesting, like 90s and 80s cars and very, very weird list.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I only have a few. I think I've only got like 6 on my list total, but I tried to go with ones that were almost recent enough that you might see one on the road, but I can't remember the last time I did.
Okay.
And then I have a couple that are more in the supercar realm that I'm like, do you remember this car?
Oh, nice.
So I've got a few. It's a good mix. I decided to not go too classic because I feel like there's a breaking point where you get classic enough where we don't remember 90% of them.
Uh-huh.
You know what
I
mean? Unless it's a classic muscle car or something obvious, you know,
some
obvious Ferrari. Everything else is just like, what is that when you see one? So I try to not go too far back.
Okay.
But I did go back into the 90s and got a few that I think are going to be fun. So this is exciting.
We've also got Dan in Columbia, South Carolina, who wants us to talk him out of a hot hatch.
Okay.
He's stationed with the Air Force in Columbia, and he's been listening to the podcast. Dan, thank you so much.
Yeah, very cool.
He's had hot hatches and all the usual suspects come to his mind as he's been shopping, but he wants us to suggest other things for a low budget, about $8,000 or $9,000, somewhere in there. So we're excited to jump into that debate as well. Ton of questions online. And yes, the podcast after this one will be even more questions. Todd and I are opening podcast 500 up to pretty much any question.
Totally.
Cars, not cars. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know anything about steeplechase, so don't ask me about steeplechase. Or
somebody, I don't know. But now you've done it, because now there's going to be no one's going to ask that question until now. There's going to be a steeplechase question for some unknown reason.
Not sure. Anyway, so
but everything's on the table, which will be very exciting. Yeah. Come on, it's 500 podcasts of you and I talking. So we're going to just all bets are off. I think brace yourself. My son and my parents are planning on listening.
Oh, you're serious.
Which I don't anticipate doing anything different as a result. We are family friendly as we're going to get. We can't get more family friendly, but I know that anything I say will come back to me at some point. Yes. So anyway, we'll see.
Huh. I wonder if my family's going to jump on. Anyway, all right. Well, let's jump into the topic Tuesday. It is the top 10 list or any length of list of cars you forgot existed. We've brought a few up on the show in the past, and I've mentioned a couple that are back on my list, as a matter of fact. And then it's weird because we see them out in media. We see them mentioned or, you know, come across something like, oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah, I blocked it out of my memory and I'm going to put it back in that dark hole of, you know, forgetfulness. But there's some that there's actually one in particular that I want to talk about that is forgotten, but it's strangely enough, it has its place, and I'll explain what I mean. So, all right, we'll jump in with one. Jump in with something interesting.
Well, one of the things I tried to do was ones that the difficulty with doing this for you and I and for most of you listening is I'm not sure if we're going to say much stuff you haven't heard of, because as enthusiasts is what we do. We dig in and we find the weird thing, and we don't want to be surprised by a car we've never seen. We want to, oh, I remember seeing one of these before. We kind of want to have car knowledge. So the car enthusiast world, there'll be a few I mentioned, you're like, oh, yeah, of course. But I wanted to start here. The XR4 Ti. Remember this?
We were just talking about this, as a matter of fact.
Late 80s, early 90s. It was an adaptation of the Ford Sierra in Europe. Sold in the U.S. It was a three-door hatch, front engine, rear-wheel drive made by Ford of Europe, championed for the U.S. market by Bob Lutz, of all people.
I didn't know that.
So I remember, and I don't know why, but I remember when they first sold this, I was of an age where I was just barely driving or just about to be driving. I was right in that like early years of driving.
Okay.
And I remember I saw one at an auto show, and it was one of the rare times I took the brochure, because it was like, what is that thing? And I was fascinated by the fact here was a little car with European roots and a three-door hatch that looked unique.
Okay.
And those things in their time were kind of hot. They were little turbos, and they were unique, and it was totally a lift the car out of Europe, drop it in the U.S., see how it sells. The answer is not well. It didn't go well, but when's the last time you saw, that was kind of my banner for this, when's the last time you saw a Merkur XR4 Ti?
A buddy of mine in college had one, early college. Right, I was going to Colorado State. We were both in smart classes, and he ended up getting one that we ended up road tripping in for a little bit, and the turbo saved that car. Mm-hmm. Because there is a little piece of knowledge that I know about that car. That block was also used in the Ford Pinto. That engine block in that XR4 Ti is also the same block. Now, it's turbocharged, and that's why I say the turbo saves that car. Also, the styling and everything else about it. But you know what I mean?
It was also kind of a nod to that great Ford Cosworth with the crazy fins that we didn't get here. It was kind of a nod to that. It was very cool in its own weird way.
You just don't see him.
You never see
him. I mean, that was honestly the last time I saw one, and I think he dinged a curb, and then the car wasn't worth anything, so it just went away. I'm thinking, oh, man.
What's going to happen with all of these is we're going to get emails, and I welcome them. We're going to get emails that are about, my neighbor has a, or, oh, the last time I saw one of those was last week, or I'm commuting today listening to this podcast, and there's one in front of me. That's going to happen totally. Too. So, yeah.
All right. Well, the first one on my list is the 1992 GMC Typhoon.
Okay.
This is the SUV version of the Cyclone that was the all-wheel drive, turbocharged. I think the genesis of where we are today with hot SUVs.
Interesting.
Name me an SUV prior to the Typhoon that was turbocharged, designed to do nothing else than tow a couple of kayaks.
And go quickly,
and it was all-wheel drive. Because now that recipe is universal.
That's what everybody's doing.
Almost every manufacturer makes one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, shoot, we're hearing Ferraris, you know, considering this because Lotus, the Urus is out.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, so for an all-wheel drive, turboed or very high horsepower, SUV. And then you think, well, why does it need to go fast? It's an SUV. It's my Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
It's my, you know, it's my Chevy S10, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Why does that need all-wheel drive and need to go fast? I'll just get a sports car. But that was the genesis.
But I think, here we are now.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't see Typhoons anymore.
That's a good point. Well, I think Jay Leno has one of each. I think he has a Typhoon and a Cyclone. What was the...
Jay Leno has one of each of...
Of course,
named
all
car,
of the above weird things.
Car
he probably
here.
Has an XR4 Ti
probably.
And most of the rest of the things on my list. What was the other thing? Was it the Shogun that was the Fiesta that was made rear-wheel drive with a V6 or whatever?
Yes.
He has one of those. I mean, he has everything.
It's like Ford does the Renault R5 turbo thing.
Yes.
Which is not on my list, by the way, because
I
hated the Le Car.
I'm not a fan of the Le Car.
No, okay. They were in my neighborhood, and I hated that thing because it was so dumb looking.
Another thing that I'm like, remember this, and I actually kind of like the styling, and I feel like I haven't seen one in years. Second generation Ford Probe.
Okay.
I actually thought that was a good looking car.
The name was not.
That's a whole separate problem.
Yeah.
But I thought the first gen Ford Probe looked terrible.
Yeah.
Okay. But the second gen, I thought, looked like a really good, stands a test of time design.
Yeah, it was coming
and
around
I
to be a sports car.
I haven't seen one in forever.
That's good.
I feel like one of the years, I feel like maybe the first year we ran Lemons, I feel like there was one then.
Was there in one of the races?
In Tacoma, but that's been years ago now. And of course, it was a perfect Lemons car because I'm sure they got it for like a I'll take that off your hands price. You know, if I get it out of the weeds of your yard, will you let me have it? And the answer was probably yes.
If I can get it onto the flatbed.
Seriously, I can't remember the last time I saw a second-gen Ford Probe. And remember, while we're thinking about the history of it, that car was originally supposed to replace the Mustang.
That's right. That's right.
So then Ford didn't replace the Mustang and released the Ford Probe as a front-wheel drive. It should certainly by the second-gen, it should have been rear-wheel drive. It looked like it should have been a rear-wheel drive car.
It absolutely appears
that
way.
And then it died. Yeah.
Mm. Well, the car that I had mentioned before is not a performance car. It is the 1987 to 1993 Cadillac Elante. When was the last time you saw one of these things?
Wasn't that the car that they promoted during Robin Williams' movie Cadillac Man? Wasn't that the thing he
was
drove?
It?
I think it was. I think it's the last time I've seen one. Was
You're
in
kidding
that
me.
Movie. Yeah.
Well, here's my issue with the Elante.
Oh, just one. Okay, please.
It is a Pininfarina design,
sure,
technically,
yeah,
which means when you go to the Italian car shows, it is theoretically eligible to enter.
So,
and this happened at the Ferrari Concours in Pebble Beach.
I was hoping so,
At one of the Concours, and this was years ago, and I walked in and I thought, all right, Italian awesomeness.
I love it.
And I looked over and there was a row of Elantes. I'm going, what is that thing doing here? Oh, no. Don't tell me you got it in a technicality.
You know what this says to me is we could do a YouTube series on this. And I want to say if somebody else does it, then know that it started here. A YouTube series, which is you figure out the weird technicality car you can take to the really high-end snooty car shows, and you just keep showing up with a really ratty version of the thing that does qualify.
So that's not Radwood. That's a different category.
It's a different thing than Radwood. It's
but
close
it could catch on like
I
Radwood.
I will acknowledge the closest thing I can think of that's been done with that was the Top Gear guys originally did it with Alfa Romeos, and they towed one of them onto the lawn. You remember that? They had three Alphas, and they had the one that they had to tow in the middle with the tow strap covered up.
Oh, my gosh.
And they towed it onto the lawn.
Right.
And then, of course, I know the car Trek thing just happened, and they did something. They basically got cars in that shouldn't have gotten in. But I'm talking about what your point, not bring a ratty version of the brand we're covering. I'm talking about the car that shouldn't qualify and still does. Is funny. That's really funny. You show up at the gate where the car park is over there for the – oh, wait. You qualify.
I like that. Elantes are in. If there's an Italian car show and you see an Elante, just
funny
sigh. Just sigh.
I like it. Here's another one I haven't seen in forever. Civic Del Sol.
Oh, you're
right.
When's
the last time you saw one of those? And they were, honestly, they were and are cool. That seems like a Lemons
I've car. Seen them at Lemons. I've seen them not in any of our Lemons races, but just online. And you know, when the promoters have shown videos or whatever. I've seen them in there and I think, oh yeah, that rear window rolled down.
But I almost feel like Lemons doesn't qualify. I mean, my question on all of these, I mean, again, I saw a Ford Probe there, is when's the last time you saw one of these on the road? Like somebody's car is a XR4 Ti or a Civic Del Sol.
Mm.
Somebody is writing right now about their neighbor who has a Civic Del Sol, or maybe you do, but I haven't seen one in forever.
Wow.
Cool little car. I mean, it was when Honda was making all kinds of interesting cars. I mean, they had the Prelude of that same era. They had that was the back end of the S2000. They were making a lot of cool cars in that era. And here's the Civic Del Sol, which is the, you know, the Civic body, but it had that really cool automated top. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
in
it was
its time.
Actually.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, the small cars of that era, CRXs. Mm-hmm. CRXs were cool.
Yeah, so, yeah,
they ran
were.
Forever.
Yeah, for sure.
I've got the 1985 to 1991 Subaru XT on my list. Mm. It looks like a sports car. It is not really a sports car. It's okay. The wedge, the doorstop.
Yeah, yeah.
The blocky, angular, I think they designed it with a chainsaw or carved it out of a block of ice. But the Subaru XT always kind of captured me because I thought, hey, that's a sport. Is that a sports car? Is
it, are we qualifying that as a sports car?
It seems pretty economical in a wedgy doorstop shape that looks sporty, but I guess not. But it was from the future. It looked so cool. It had pop-up headlights. It was so cool.
It's in that same design ethos as the Fiat X19.
Oh, yes.
It's in the similar era and similar design where we're all doing super futuristic things. Anyway.
I mean, the SVX could be on the list, too.
Yes, it could.
That is a weird,
it
heavy,
is a weird, it
not good car.
It does not perform like it looks. I think it still looks great. I was always fascinated by those things, but I unfortunately never heard anything really good about them, unfortunately, yeah.
And somebody has had one. I know. Somebody listening has had one.
For sure, yeah, or maybe more than one. Here's one. When I was first, like the first time I ever worked on a set, the commercial director from the Dallas area had just been given one of these because he was their up-and-coming director, and he had a terrible car. He was young. He was their up-and-coming director. They gave him one of these as they were like, you need to have a decent car. First time I ever saw one, and I have rarely seen one since.
Uh-oh.
The Mazda Millennia.
Oh, yes.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
This was part of Mazda's attempt to go upmarket, and some of them are even branded as the Amati, which was Mazda's attempt to make a Lexus brand. Mazda's attempt to make a upper level brand.
I remember Amati being tossed around as a potential thing, but were they actually branded that?
I have seen some branded that.
Really?
I don't know if that's an aftermarket thing, but I remember when I first saw one, this guy had one and it was actually branded as a Mazda Millennia. And I was like, what on earth is this? And then later years, I remember seeing them and it actually said Amati on some of the badging.
So now the acronym is always Mazda answer the is?
they did just take the it is a word jumble with the word Miata. That is really what
it is.
Did. It's terrible, yeah.
It just mixed up the letters.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, when's the last time you saw a Mazda Millennia? This was this was their attempt to go upmarket.
Wow.
Little sedan from Mazda.
You know, it's interesting because everybody is now seeing, as of this recording, Mazda with their 6 releasing some, well, I don't know that Mazda has, but just some beautiful renderings of Mazda going back after a larger rear-wheel drive car market sedan. Wow.
If they drop into,
gorgeous.
If they make the Mazda 6, this is the rumor, if they make the Mazda 6 a car in that midsize area that happens to be rear-wheel drive, what this means is, we're about to do a big comparo of these kind of cars, like the Civic and the Sonata and the Camry. We're about to do a thing for television about all of those. If the new Mazda 6 comes out in that price point, rear-wheel drive, it'll have a class to itself. Or is it going to go a little upmarket and compete with the 3 Series and the Giulia and the Genesis, which are almost the same price? It's a really interesting place for them to be. I hope they do. I'd love to see Mazda do that, but this is the rumor right now.
It's total rumor. I'd love to see them do the Genesis thing, where maybe the entry-level, quote-unquote, model could be had with a manual transmission. Or maybe the sport version of it. And Mazda is so well-positioned and known to bring manuals to enthusiasts.
True, true, true.
They could do that with that car. Can you imagine?
Be interesting.
Manual, even if it's not the base model. Okay, it's got turbo power, and it's a manual transmission, beautiful sedan. And then maybe, you know, you can get it with the automatic something up here in a higher trim level or something.
The rumor goes further, though. The rumor goes so far as to say it's going to be a straight 6 rear-wheel drive.
Even better.
And
bring that.
I'm just going to put this out here because I don't know if it's going to happen. We're fully in rumor mill, but what would the irony be like for Toyota, pretty much biggest car maker in the world, to say, we don't want to spend the money, we can't spend the money to make a new straight 6 engine, and then Mazda goes and does it?
Now, we don't know where that 6 would be from. We're assuming it would be built and engineered and designed by Mazda. But
theoretically, yes. Who knows? They could also partner with BMW. Who knows?
BMW's like, we're not selling as many cars, but engines? Man,
we're pulling straight 6s off the shelf and giving them to everybody. Yeah.
I've got the 1989 to 1991 Chrysler TC by Maserati as the prime example of how to sully a luxury name, a performance car with long history. That is the best way, short of a Cadillac Cimarron, but doing that, the TC by Maserati, nobody really knew what to do with this car. It was terrible.
I will say that Maserati has done plenty of things to damage their own name.
I suppose so.
I know you're the fan now, but they've done plenty of damage to their own name.
I'm like a fan of a little bit of their product line. And then their future product line, I'm a fan of.
Yeah, but wasn't this 5 minutes in which Chrysler owned a large percentage of Maserati, and so they made that. And yuck. But see, there's an example. There's an example of what we're talking about. If somebody has a Maserati Ferrari show, you could show up in that car.
Oh, that's awful.
Think about that
for a second. Oh, that's an awful thought.
Yeah.
Oh,
You're arguing.
Oh, there's a arguing
at the gate with the guy in the blazer who's got the clipboard. He's like, no, it absolutely qualifies.
Totally. Look at the badge in the back.
You're having him bring other guys in. You get in a big argument about it. You know.
See the etching in the glass quarter opera window, that Maserati
we
Trident?
We would have far too much fun doing that. But
gosh. All right, what else you got?
The Millennium made me think of this. And then after this, I have two more that are much more in the I can't afford these, but they're interesting. The Millennium made me think of this. I feel like the modern-day Mazda Millennia is a car we actually do bring up on this podcast, and I see them occasionally, and they always turn my head. Suzuki Kizashi.
Oh, yeah.
It has a very similar styling and scale to that Mazda Millennia.
Still pretty, yeah.
It was Suzuki's attempt to make a little bit bigger four-door sedan. I think the styling of them is great. They have a solid all-wheel drive system. In the winter, they come out here in Utah. I still see like one or two a year, but they're not common, and they don't look like anything else. And my question is to all of us, when's the last time you saw one? You actually saw a Suzuki Kizashi? That car's only like 5 years old, maybe 10 at the most.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
They vanished because Suzuki vanished as a car.
Right. Board. Interesting. Well, I've got the car that really made the most impact on me as an up-and-coming, growing, young car enthusiast.
Okay.
It was the 1985 Chrysler Laser and Dodge Daytona. Amazingly enough, my uncle had a friend named John Park, who was also a medical doctor like my uncle.
Okay.
John Park ended up moving to Park City. Never found him. I don't know if he still lives here. I don't know if he's still around.
All right.
Both of these guys were best friends, my uncle and John Park. They were medical doctors, and they flew on Orbis, the flying eye hospital. They did a stint on that, flying around the world, conducting surgeries, and they had the exploits of, I mean, they've got stories like you wouldn't believe.
I could only imagine, yeah.
But he was this flashy young single doctor, and he got the Chrysler Laser. Maybe it was the Daytona, I don't know, but it was turbocharged. I didn't know what a turbo was. I didn't know what that felt like. And he said, you want to go for a ride? And I came outside, and what looked to my eye like this low, beautiful, crazy looking car. It's not. It's not that great looking.
It's really not that great at anything. But
the proportions are really off. The windows are too tall.
In that era, just, though. You know.
But to my eye, I was just going, what?
Interesting.
Can we have a ride? And so he showed me. It had a boost gauge in there, and he just, oh my gosh. So we took off, and it just made it such an impression. So the Chrysler Laser, it was.
I'm looking at it and just reminiscing, because you're right. When's the last time you saw one of those?
Just don't see them.
I have to leave this discussion, at least for me personally, with two supercars.
Okay.
One I think I've only ever seen once, and it was parked at a thing like Pebble Beach.
Okay.
And the other is a car that many of you will have heard of, but I will go ahead and play my hand, and that one is a car that, if I had stupid money, this is where it goes.
Mm.
But the first one to talk about is the Cizeta, the V16T.
Oh, yeah, the Marauder, Cizeta,
yes,
Marauder.
Yes, this was, want to see an alt twist on the Lamborghini Diablo, it's this car.
It was the same designer.
I'll go you one further. It's Gandini.
Marcello Gandini.
Yes, it's Gandini.
Marcello Gandini.
So he does all of these classic Lamborghinis and crazy things.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
Lamborghini gets sold to Chrysler, and they take his Diablo design and they soften it a bit and release it as the Diablo. He gets pissed off, gets with a bunch of other people. They make the V16 version that adheres to his original design. You can look at it next to a Diablo, and it looks a lot like a Diablo, but it's a V6. That's not just the name. It's a V16.
Oh, my gosh.
It was like $700,000 in the 90s. It was sold in the early 90s.
Unbelievable. That's right.
They made a dozen of them. There are a dozen of them out there. If you look fast, you go, oh, it's a Diablo. Oh, it's the Diablo concept. No, no, it's a different car with a different engine from a different company.
Short of going all the way back to the Packard era,
mm-hmm.
I'm having trouble thinking of another car besides Bugatti doing V16s.
Cadillac did a V16 back in that, but that's that era, though. That's that.
Well, yeah,
back
going
era.
Back to the Packard, yeah. Duesenberg, Cadillac era.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
V16 is astounding.
Seriously. So that is a V16 Diablo. It is even squatter and wider than, it's crazy looking, but it does look like somebody did riff on a Diablo. I've never seen one move. I've only seen it sit on the lawn at a place like Keppel Beach, and that was once.
Unbelievable.
And it's unbelievable. Yeah, there's a dozen of them out there.
Wow. That's great. All right, well, we all talk about the E39 M5 as being sort of the holy grail, four-door sedan, hot, naturally aspirated, manual transmission BMW. Does anybody remember the 540i version of that?
Mm.
That was also really fast. And I remember
yes.
reading reviews on it.
Yes.
And all the reviewers were going, this is fast and
yeah.
awesome. And the
yeah,
M5
yeah.
is great and all, but you want
Have
to
you
save some
this?
Money?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get the E39 540i with the manual. I love the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
I actually liked it because it was even more stealth. It didn't look quite
yeah.
so
yeah,
over
yeah.
the top. Yeah, every reviewer was just amazed at this car. The 540i from that era,
That's
late 90s
good.
To early 2000s.
That's good. You're right. I can't remember the last time I saw one of those. Yeah. Last one for me. Do you have more, too?
I've got one last story here.
Good, good. Well, here's the last one for me. And this is, honestly, if I had stupid money... No, if I had really stupid money, I'd buy a Pagani Huayra, not because I think it's the best car ever, but because I think that is a car that lives up to its price tag.
Yeah. If
Inside
you look at it, you
out,
think, yeah.
Yeah. Somebody says $2 million, you go, I see it. I see where it went. But stupid money to buy a car that doesn't make much sense, this is my car. And many of you know it. It's the Jaguar XJ220.
Oh, yes.
Now,
yes.
my question is, when's the last time you saw one of these? But let me tell you the quick story
Crazy.
Of this. This was Jaguar shooting for the upper level of supercardom. They were thinking Bugatti Veyron before Bugatti Veyron. They were shooting
yes.
for the
yes.
end of everything. And the whole reason for the name, the XJ220, was because it was supposed to go 220. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was the target. 220 miles an hour. Supposed to be a V12 all-wheel drive. And a bunch of people saw it in the late 80s when it was first premiered and put down their big deposit.
Yeah.
And then there is a downturn, economic downturn, and a lot of people pull their deposits. And they had emissions problems with the V12. And it becomes a rear-wheel drive, turbocharged, six-cylinder.
Oh, yeah.
Which, by the way, for a brief moment, had the fastest production car record around the Nürburgring and the fastest production car top speed. It was almost like 217, almost that 220 figure with that turbo V6. So it's not like, wah, wah, the car got slow. No, no. Quite fast. They are boats. They are huge.
It just
cars.
Didn't have the recipe that everybody
exactly.
thought.
It wasn't all-wheel drive.
It was
V12.
Still fast.
Yes, exactly.
It just didn't have a V12 allure.
I want one of these. I just want one of these.
I know
there's a company in England that takes them and makes them drive like they should have because they didn't end up driving all that well. But that Nürburgring record's interesting. They did like a 745 in the early 90s, which is fast period today. So, yeah. When's the last time you saw an XJ220? I see one about once every couple of years at various auto shows. It is a car very dependent upon color and wheels because I feel like all of them are silver with the big coaster wheels.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, it's fine. But when you put like nice modern wheels on it and you paint it a color, I'm sorry. I still think it's one of the best looking cars ever.
It has sensual surfaces on there. They're just beautiful.
And it is genuinely massive.
Yeah.
It's a huge, it's like almost feels like it's a suburban Link, but it's a sports car.
But then you get inside and you're like, oh yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
The 90s. Yay. I remember the 90s.
See, this is why it doesn't make any sense, but man, they're cool.
My only connection to that car, I agree, they're beautiful. My connection to that car, I've told this story before, so I'll tell it very briefly again. And that I heard when I interned at Ford, made friends mm-hmm. with a clay modeler there who is a lot older. He was close to retirement and had seen and heard everything going on at Ford.
Okay.
And this was the era when Ford owned Jaguar.
Yeah.
That car was developed.
Yeah, yeah.
They dismantled and destroyed XJ220 serial number 0001 mm-hmm. to build the 1995 Ford GT90 concept. That car is actually an XJ220 Bones underneath. And he said they threw the discarded parts in a corner and everybody there was weeping that this happened. And he said, I'm half tempted to take those parts home. I think people did, actually. They just took them out of the building and took them home because he was so distraught over the serial number one XJ220 being destroyed to make what some people have called the greatest looking GT. I don't think it looks that great personally, and I don't know where it is. Probably in the Ford archives.
Probably. Well, there's only like 275 or 250, 275, less than 300 XJ220s in the world. Some of them were race cars. They're so cool. They're inexplicably cool. I just have a thing for them. And here's the other thing that's crazy about it. I didn't first see one until the early 2000s. Mm. When I first saw one, I was like, okay, hang on, full stop. What is that?
Mm. Yeah.
And now they just haunt me. And their terrible 80s interior, but yeah.
Amazing. All right, last car for me is the 1992 to 1997 Infiniti J30.
Yeah.
Also known as the Nissan Leopard.
When's the last time you saw one of those?
You just don't. Yeah. That was a styling era, too, that looked like the rock tumbler, the polished rock tumbler era.
There's a description, yeah.
And you think, okay, where's the clean, you know, sharp, defining, characteristic line of this car? Doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring that up was because there was one that was seared into my mind.
Oh, okay.
That I showed you a photo of, and maybe I'll post this photo sometime.
You should definitely post it, yeah.
It was owned by a man named Harry Bentley Bradley. And Harry is very well known and connected with the beginnings of Hot Wheels.
Okay.
Right. He worked on, as a designer, Hot Wheels, and worked for Hot Wheels and Mattel in the late 60s. And pretty much set them on the course to where they are now. As a matter of fact, he left because he didn't think it'd go anywhere.
Interesting.
Harry is in his 80s now. He used to be an instructor at Art Center, and he was a fine art and transportation design instructor there.
Okay.
I never had him as an instructor, but Harry also suffered from polio as a child and had the arm crutches, and he got around. He was paralyzed from the waist down.
Okay.
So he had his Infiniti J30 modified to look very much like a Hot Wheels car. If you know whose car it is, there's only one car that looked like that.
Interesting.
I don't know why he picked the J30, but he liked the shape. And then he customized it to look like this goofy-looking Hot Wheels car. It makes sense if you know whose car it is, like I said.
Sure, sure, sure.
If you don't, you go and, what? That's some real taste there. Okay, man. But Harry was known, and I've heard horror stories. I never experienced this myself. I'm afraid of Harry.
Okay.
Because Harry is a legend in car design. One of the original people that founded Hot Wheels and made Hot Wheels what it is today. Just like, you know, this cloak of royalty in car design. Matter of fact, a lot of car designers go to Hot Wheels. They go to Mattel to work for Hot Wheels. Okay. And so because he had polio and had the arm crutches, if he didn't like your work, your newly created artwork that you sweated and strained over to create and put your heart and soul in, he would take the tip of his crutch and tear it off the wall.
Wow.
There's and tell you to do it again or do it better or pretty much tear your ego right to shreds. I never saw this happen.
Wow.
I just heard about it. I'm afraid of Harry. I'm afraid of Harry to this day. But it made you want to do better. If he didn't do that to your work, you were like, oh my gosh, I think my art is decent.
I'll give you one more. I'm
scary.
Actually, you're making me look him up. And so I looked him up. Did you know he designed the Wienermobile?
Yes, he did the Wienermobile too.
That's also amazing.
I mean, the guy is legendary as far as car design, just the weight of history and what we know and all this stuff. So he did a lot of different things, was a longtime instructor. Many designers have had Harry Bradley as an instructor.
Wow.
And again, He had this Infiniti J30 with a weird fin on the back and side pipes and moon discs. And
interesting.
It was just weird looking. So I'll have to post that photo sometime.
But you're right. Even without all that, when's the last time you saw one of those?
Yeah, exactly. We're longtime users and big believers in Griot's Garage car care products. That's because while many other brands are just rebranded versions of the same few products, Griot's Garage has developed, manufactured, and bottled bespoke car care products since 1990.
In fact, many of Griot's first customers were collector cars displayed at Pebble Beach. And they're a family company based in Washington State, still dedicated to having the best products for every car and budget. In fact, Paul learned his crazy certified Paul-owned car care style directly from Griot's.
We've used Griot's Garage car care products on our own cars for over 20 years, and we wouldn't use anything else.
If you're wondering how to get going, they offer free training and techniques through their videos and their website and starter kits that will help your car look its best.
Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all the liquid products are made right here in the USA. They offer a 100% lifetime guarantee, so give them a try.
When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, you can now use the code EVERYDAY for 15% off liquids and 10% off everything else on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Dan in Columbia, South Carolina writes to us to talk him out of a hot hatchback.
Okay.
He's currently stationed in Columbia with the Air Force as an aircraft mechanic. He found the podcast about a year ago, and he listens on his commute every day. Dan, Cool. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, very cool.
He's gone back and listened to all the episodes from the beginning. Keep in mind that this is $4.99.
Yes.
So here's his deal. His current car is a 96 Civic with 250,000 miles, and he hates it.
All right. Well, this is why we're here. Let's solve this.
He bought it 4 years ago and put about 20,000 miles a year on it. He bought it to be super reliable and economical after the O2 WRX he had while stationed in Alaska gave him a lot of issues.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
For the first couple of years, a car that runs indefinitely, gets 40 miles a gallon, seems like a fair trade for 100 crank horsepower and enough body roll, he says, to make the guys from Deadliest Catch seasick.
I love the fact that he went total pendulum swing.
Mm-hmm.
He had, because I suspect that you liked the WRX when it ran.
Yeah, true.
And
true.
Because your headspace here clearly on this Civic was it just needs to run.
Uh-huh.
All it needs to do is run. And I also find it funny that he's a mechanic for the Air Force.
That's true. There's a bit of irony.
So not only did it not run, but it ran badly enough that he didn't want to work on it at all either. It's just out. The WRX is gone.
Work on the aircraft.
I want a Civic that just runs and never asks me for a thing.
All right. So he'd like to get something immediately, but he's willing to wait for the right car.
Okay.
He's looking for a car to commute in 35 miles each way to work, mostly highway-style driving on country roads.
Okay.
He takes some twisties on weekends, twisty roads. He's a fan of light and agile cars that can drive hard without getting in too much trouble.
Sure. Okay, good.
His only real need for the car is enough cargo room for his hockey gear and maybe a mountain bike, but he can get a rack, so get a rack.
Mm-hmm.
Gas mileage isn't a huge concern. He'd prefer at least 25 to 30 on the highway. My choices might not quite qualify, but, you know.
but it's not his primary concern.
Yes.
He'd like it to be, but it's not the deal breaker at all. Yeah.
He's not too worried about passenger space. His wife has an 07 Honda Fit that they use as their road trip and hauler car. That might change depending on what he gets. Stick shift is preferred. He's
good,
not
awesome.
Set on it. He said, I'm a decent mechanic, not too worried about high miles, but he doesn't want to be in the garage every weekend fixing stuff. It's like when you meet somebody who's a masseuse and everybody sort of sidles over to him like, man, I've had a rough week.
My shoulders.
Hey, so you're a masseuse, right? Could you just, like, what do you think of this area right here? Does that feel tense to you? It's the last thing they want to do on their weekends.
You're right, yep.
It's like asking a professional chef. Like, they chef all the week long.
Yeah.
Or all weekend long.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm really hungry. You're a chef.
My wife has a best friend who owns a restaurant.
Yes, she does.
She's an amazing chef.
She's phenomenal.
And I have never understood, genuinely never understood, why she and her boyfriend love to host the holidays so they can cook for everybody.
I don't get it either.
Because they're you want to go to their holiday events. You want to go because the food's amazing. And there's four or five times more of it than the group that came. But I've never understood how when this is a holiday, what you really want to do is cook for everyone you know.
I'm thankful. And when you get the invite from her,
yes. You
go.
You immediately respond.
Go.
But I've never understood. They work so hard and they have a great restaurant with great food. And you would think, just to what you're saying, that the minute you get out of there, it's like, I'm not cooking. Well, we're doing something else for Thanksgiving. And no, they're like, no, come over.
Oh, her killer artichoke dip. And then she adds the smoked salmon to the artichoke dip.
Stop. Yeah.
Holy moly.
There's a lot
so
of stuff
good.
Going on there.
I'm getting hungry. All right. Now, we thought the obvious solution. Dan thought that. I'm going with hot hatch or a small wagon, something like that. Plenty of space for the gear, maybe a passenger or two. And he loves the looks and the do-it-all kind of ethos
that these cars
represent. So he thought, usual suspects, Fiesta STs, GTIs, Mazda Speed 3s. And then he heard us in his head.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry.
Asking, why are you limiting yourself to a hatch?
This is the question. You're right.
Which is
right,
probably what we'd ask. So he said, all right, fine. He expanded his search to other types of cars, and now he's just overwhelmed. He doesn't have any idea what, anything outside of hatches, especially at the price point of $8,000, nine for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's being generous. Dan,
you an
thank
extra
you.
$1,000. That's pretty good at
extra
this point.
$1,000 bucks.
For sure, yeah.
Extra money. So he's stuck on one car a few days, and then he finds a new option, mm-hmm, and the mm-hmm. cycle continues. He's 100% open to anything we throw at him. As long as it has great dynamics, can carry the stuff, he's at our mercy.
That's crazy. I'm sorry right now. But anyway, yeah, you're up for anything, which is very cool, Dan. One of the things you said that's very interesting is that you've never owned a rear-wheel drive car. And while looking at hatches, you did want to mention that you will not be buying a Mini. Okay, that your mother-in-law drives a Mini.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife doesn't like it, and the last thing she wants is a Mini in the driveway to add a talking point. So Minis
so
are out.
Funny.
Now, granted, we were leaving hatches anyway.
Yes.
But I think the interesting thing here also is the fact that you're taking the GTI off the table. An mm-hmm. obvious choice because there are too many of them with the guys you work with. You feel like that's all that's in the parking lot.
Says there's six of them at his job.
So anyway, so all right, those are the only two that are off the table, but everything else you've said, bring it. And I have to say right away, Dan, if you have not owned rear-wheel drive,
mm-hmm.
this is your moment.
Yeah.
I think that's the key thing here. And I want to go ahead and say it because all of us are saying it. I have other things. But yes, you could go buy a Miata.
Yes.
You're in South Carolina. You could buy a rear-wheel drive Miata. You could enjoy it. Done. But then there's other things here too.
All you have to do is cut a small hole in the top of the Miata and then sew a grommet in that hole. So you stick your hockey stick up through the roof, through the grommet, and then you're good. Maybe you could put a rubber cap on it for the rain or something. I don't
passenger
know.
Seats are fine. Plus, have you've ever seen the NAs? Here's things you haven't seen for a long time. Have you seen the NA Miatas with the old school 60s style cage on the back trunk?
Oh, yeah.
To put your gear on, you strap your gear to. You see those on the NAs. For some reason, they never went on after the NAs, but I actually see NAs with that often.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
All right. Well, Dan, I'm in full agreement. Rear wheel drive. And so you mentioned that your wife has the reliable, dependable car, the Fit.
And he mentioned he's a mechanic. So now he's in trouble.
He's a mechanic. And you've done the reliable thing. I know you still want reliability.
Okay.
But then there's this other side of the planet.
Yes.
The car planet.
Yes.
That is a little bit less reliable, not as good gas mileage, but how much more fun are you having?
Okay.
Starting off with the mid-2000s Pontiac GTO, I wouldn't say it gets good gas mileage.
No, I wouldn't say that either, yeah.
But you're going to love how it drives,
yeah.
And you can get them for $8,000 to $9,000. You might have to work hard to find a manual one of those. You might have to bump it up a little bit.
But it's an option, though, for sure, yeah.
GTO, V8, mm-hmm. You just want to roar around everywhere. I mean, that is a different car
mm-hmm.
and perfect for the kind of roads that you've got.
Yeah, yeah.
Fits your gear, road trip, you name it, GTO. You could also go with any C4 Corvette for that kind of money. Big
true,
rear
true,
hatch
true.
Space
yeah, yeah.
back there, okay, for all your gear. Again, Chevy 350,
mm-hmm.
manual transmission.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
10
yeah.
grand, mm-hmm. any C4 Corvette you can get for that money and throw away all the preconceived notions that you've got about Corvettes. Just leave them behind and go enjoy how much fun this car is to drive. It's just fun. I also thought of 944s. You brought up 944s mm-hmm. the last podcast, actually.
I did,
stuck
yes.
in my head. But I've got the early 90s Z32 generation Nissan 300ZX on my list.
Yeah, unfortunately, the good ones may be out of his budget, but they're really awesome.
This is a struggle. I agree. I'm not saying turbo, just a regular, well, not the 2+2 either, but just the regular 300ZX Z32 generation.
Yeah,
could
yeah,
you
yeah.
find one that's unmolested? As a starting place, kind of where we started our driving careers, mm-hmm, you know, our, mm-hmm. you know, we loved cars before, but then I had the 928, Todd had the 300ZX.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying go get a 928, so that's off the table, but a 300ZX, a little bit more reliable. You can wrench on them and maybe you could find one in that price range that's unmolested. And it's interesting because the rear hatch on that car, as I recall, had a fair amount of space.
Yeah, it was decent. It really was. Yeah, for sure. I used it for everything. I loved it. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking. So you're going older, not as good gas mileage, not as reliable, but more towards the fun. And I think that's what you might be willing to do at this point. You know, you can always go back to Honda. You can
yeah,
always go get
sure.
a CRZ
sure.
and
yeah,
commute,
yeah.
and it'll run for 250 million zillion miles. But you've done that already.
Mm-hmm.
So what about a little bit of V8 in your life.
I see it. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I've got a few for you. Since I mentioned Miata, I have to mention this alternative. You could find yourself options in the world of the Saturn Sky or Pontiac Solstice.
Those are good.
You haven't said you want a convertible, but you could get those. Now, the problem is you probably want the GXP or the Saturn is called the Redline, which is the turbo version. Those might break your budget, but if they do, it won't buy much. So those are out there for sure. But I have a few others I want to mention. Now, I have to say it because people feel like they aren't listening to this podcast unless I don't say it. I have to bring up the 86 chassis, probably just above your budget for the one.
I was
going
to say, can you even get one for 89?
You're going to be in like, you know, because when you talk light,
pool and
agile, you talk light, agile, you want space. This car starts to rise to the top very quickly, but I don't think you can get them for your budget.
This is the Hurricane build.
Yeah.
It survived a hurricane.
Exactly. This is the salvage title one, so be careful of that. I don't think that's on the list, but I did think of three others for $9,000.
Okay.
Talking rear wheel drive, actual sports cars, like focused sports cars. One, the Genesis Coupe. Get a first gen Genesis Coupe. If you can, get yourself the V6. The V6 is definitely better. The shifter on that is average. It's a nice place to be. I think the first gens have aged far better than the second gen, the refresh.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
So Genesis Coupe is out there. That's a really good one. The Mazda RX-8.
Oh,
you can have your choice for $9,000. Get as late in the build as you can.
Speaking of worse gas mileage and less reliability.
Yes, it's both of the above. It's both of the above. I mean, you're going to have to get onto the forums and watch your oil consumption, and your gas mileage will not be good. This is the downside, but they're out there. They are surprisingly usable. They are great to drive. They have that interesting rotary. You might. It's one of those things where you either drive one of those and you instantly get out and you love it, or you instantly get out and go, that's not for me.
Sure.
So the RX-8 is an option. And then the last one I have to say, we've made some fun of this car because it's been around for so long, but it's working to Dan's benefit here. You could buy yourself a Nissan 370Z for $9,000.
Are they $9,000 now?
Some of them are. There's not a lot.
Is that the 40th anniversary or the 50th anniversary
exactly
car?
Exactly right. No, seriously, that's what's ridiculous. This is what's absurd, is you can get that car new right now for 45 to 50, but in season 4, we did an affordable sports cars episode.
Right.
And one of the cars we had was the 2010 370Z because the guy that bought it was selling it for $10,000 when we shot the piece.
That's right.
And I was just looking recently on Auto Tempest, and here they were. Was looking nationwide, I will admit, but here they were, a page worth of 370Zs. Now, a lot of times, unfortunately, the ones that are cheap enough for you are roadsters. I would not recommend the roadster in that car.
Agreed.
But if you can get the coupe, you get the coupe for $9,000, a 370Z that, frankly, unless you are a person that really knows the Z cars, everybody looking at it thinks you just bought it because it looks like the new ones, which now is to your benefit. So 370Z, and I'm leaving it there.
I like it. See, I don't like the 350s as much as the 300, the Z32, and the 370Z. I like those two bookends.
350s are great for robust track cars where tons of parts are available.
They are.
That's why
they're
fantastic.
I prefer the 370.
But now that the 370 is $10,000, get a 370. Be done.
Wow.
Yeah. If you like driving like us, you're always looking for your next track event. No matter what your skill level, MotorsportReg.com makes it ridiculously easy for you to find and register for track events all across the country.
With over 7,000 events annually, it's the most complete events listing nationwide. And if you're an event organizer, MotorsportReg will help you fill every event with tools that automate tasks, improve accuracy, and grow participation. Plus, there's a full-time support team who are there when you need them.
Learn more and find events today at msreg.com/everydaydriver. That's msreg.com/everydaydriver.
We must get to questions on social media. On Facebook, Damon Dickens says, when you're on a forum or Facebook group, is there a car person etiquette regarding a question that goes something like this? Hey, so what do I have to do to change, you know, my car back to stock to get the turbo fixed under warranty? What should I do to get the fix under warranty?
He's asking us a moral question.
And you don't call them out for having integrity and saying you've got to pay to play and, you changed whatever that was and it broke and, you know, that was kind of your fault. Do you leave it there or do you say something? This is a tough question.
I think it's almost person to person. But
I really do think it's person to person. It's really tough, and you can't come in guns blazing and say, blah, 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 your fault, da, da, da. Mm-hmm. I do remember when the Evo 10 came out, right about the time that was, you know, huge popularity in the STI of the same generation.
Sure, sure, yeah.
both those cars, I believe, were tracked by their respective companies, because when people would go to an SCCA event, or they would track the daylights out of it and break something under warranty, and they bring it back and they're like, I don't know, this part just failed. Under extreme track driving of, okay, you know, sure. So there wasn't the delineation by car companies realizing that this is what needed to happen. They needed to either accept it or, you know, just say, no way. We're not warranting it.
You're saying defining that they were aware that only those things would only have happened under tracking conditions, that kind of thing?
Correct. They were defining that. Or they had to be open to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or they were building it to take the abuse. You know, yeah, they had to make all these decisions. So to be honest, it kind of depends. It depends on the situation and what that person is asking. If there's, you know, you can set the example, and I'll go back to my dad. He's, you know, my favorite person ever and a leader in my life and somebody I looked up to greatly. And he's always set the example. Mm-hmm. And he's told me that, and then I'll forget. And if you do that with other people, I think they'll start to notice. And just set the example. Say, look, you know, I understand it costs money. On the other hand, you can't not know that you're breaking your warranty. You can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't be oblivious to that fact.
This is such a forum online gray area, because there have been court cases. I remember there was a famous one in California. There's been court cases where people have taken manufacturers to task and to court for the right to, I bought your car, should be able to modify it and still be under warranty. And those cases in some situations have actually been won by the person that was suing the car company.
Have they really?
Yes. And if you dig into any forum for very long, somebody will list out the court cases. They throw this at them or whatever. Huh. Do you want to be doing all of this?
Yeah.
It's like that thing we talked about court cases recently. Do you need this much poison in your life? But the other part of it is, just as a general service announcement, you can't go on a forum and tell somebody else on the forum they're living their life incorrectly.
True.
You just can't do that.
True.
As much as you might want to, that is the wrong venue. If you know the person personally and you could talk to them about it, like person to person, standing there,
sure,
having a conversation at a Cars and Coffee, still step carefully, best of luck to you. But on a forum,
the
you're wrong approach of anything on a forum has never resulted in anybody's mind getting changed. So I think it's dangerous in that regard.
You know, Todd and I have always talked about, whatever, in any situation in life, you can talk about yourself all day long. You can say, here's what I'd do. You can talk about you.
You can talk
about, if this were me, this would be the things I'd do. They are welcome to disagree with that. But if you're talking about you, well, that's it. You know, you're staying within your boundaries. You're saying, well, that's just me.
Yeah.
You know, here's my, I'm not telling you advice, but here's me, is what I do.
If that lead by example thing you're saying, you're saying that again, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I've got one from Driven to Distraction on Instagram. Says, okay, here's a random question that doesn't really relate to things we normally do, but we're not putting it on podcast 500. We're putting it right here. He's saying the opposite of what we normally recommend. What car would we buy specifically to not drive, to look at, to have, to maybe take to a car show?
Oh.
It is essentially, what car art would you buy and not drive?
To not drive?
And I thought of one.
Really?
Packards.
Okay.
I love the look, the presence of Packards.
I didn't know that.
I think they're awesome.
Really?
Every time I see them, I'm just like, that just has a presence that doesn't exist anymore, from a brand that doesn't exist anymore. We saw that one, we were in Arizona, we saw that one car museum, and he had three or four in there, and we started noting specific details in the chrome.
It was a
Packard signature thing.
Yeah.
I don't know which one, I don't know them that well, but anytime I see a Packard, I feel like I can tell before I know that it's a Packard. And it's not a car I need to drive. I don't care.
True.
I don't need to drive that.
Sure, sure. Now,
down the block to a car show so somebody can be like, what is that? That's a Packard? That's crazy. Maybe. There were some with like the Indian head on the front.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're crazy, and they're from another era. And I feel like Packards are the best blending of old luxury horse-drawn coaches and cars. I feel like the best blending of that was the Packards.
Interesting.
So that's my answer.
They were high-end and very distinctive for their day.
Completely so,
you knew what to look for. They stood out like crazy. Yep. Love it. All right. Well, Richard Lindsay is asking on Facebook, what's the proper way to wash a car that's been ceramic coated? Does Griot's have a product for that? Indeed, they do. His installer said that nothing should touch the surface, meaning rags, mitts, brushes, anything like that. Well, ceramic coating is really designed to protect your car from moisture, water. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason you get it coated. And I know there's ceramic coatings out there. I am not the expert in ceramic coatings as far as all the brands and everything out there. I've heard prices as high as $1,500. But get this, the ceramic coating eventually wears off and has to be redone anyway.
Yeah, true, true, true.
Griot's has a 3-in-1 wax for a reasonable price. Mm-hmm. And you can spray it on paint, wheels, and plastic, and rubber, and chrome. And it's developed by them to their standards, which means you can wash it. I recommend that highly. They know you're going to wash your car after using it. They know that eventually, even wax wears off over time.
Totally, yeah.
It just does. That's why you have to wax your car every year. It's why you're recommended. So they know this, but they have formulated their own at a far more reasonable price. And we're hearing a lot of people who are ordering it and using it and getting a fantastic result.
It's pretty cool. In fact, there's a picture I just put on Instagram of my Lotus from this past weekend when I had it parked outside and it rained, which is not really what you want to do with your Lotus. Because guess what? A car made in England and it leaks. But I have this amazing beading on the paint.
Which is what it's designed to
which
do.
Which is because I put the 3-in-1 on it. I happened to notice, I took the photo and was like, why does it look so good? I was like, oh, that's right. Last time I washed it, I used that. So it actually worked. Who knew? Craziness.
Yep. Here's the good news, Richard. It's also the easiest to apply. Of all those ceramic coatings, it's the easiest to apply.
Cars and Comments has a fightin' words question, but I like it. I like it. On Instagram, he said, what do we think of, and I hadn't heard this, but he explained it. What did we think of Doug DeMuro's recent comments about journalists who accept press cars or go on press launches? Essentially, Doug said that he thinks that accepting the free plane ticket in the hotel room and essentially to be wined and dined to drive the car results in only biased and inaccurate reviews, and people that do that are giving biased and inaccurate reviews. Well, first off, did Doug say he's no longer doing these? Because he's been on trips that we've been on too.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
So is he deciding to no longer do this? That's part of my question. Plus, he gets a lot of cars from dealers and other crazy places. But anyway, let me speak to this real quickly. Auto manufacturers have struggled with this in the last decade because what's happened in a lot of cases that we even had some press launches we weren't invited to because they were concentrating on influencers that were lifestyle people and not car people.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Over the last decade, car manufacturers, as all of the social media stuff has risen, have tried everybody they can think of at press launches, from former race drivers who now write to car journalists like ourselves to influencers and lifestyle folks that don't even know really how to drive. We've even heard, by the way, that there were some lifestyle people that were at some press launches. They couldn't drive the car because the car only came in manual. But they can do the photo of them sitting in the car talking. Yeah. Who knows if that was even true?
I don't know what file folder in my head to store that information.
I don't know either.
Like, where does that go?
Here is the inherent problem. We've talked about it on various ones of our videos. We talked about it on the Camry video, for example, that was here in Park City where they took us snowmobiling and they took us down the bobsled run. And this is the danger of these because there is an unspoken suggestion. We gave you a really nice trip. Say nice things about our car. And some people do. We try, like always, to find the good and the bad.
Yes, yes.
The thing I'll tell you that we don't like about press launches that we try to be even more careful about is what they do is they bring you all together. They put you in a room and they tell you all the talking points about the car. And then everybody goes out and repeats the talking points.
Right, right.
And so you get a bunch of reviews, video reviews or written reviews, that are exactly the same information delivered almost exactly the same way because it was given to them almost verbatim that way. Yeah. So we try very hard with our Fast Blast and other things to do something that still feels like us. We want to be candid. We want to be honest. But we also don't want to be like, this car is amazing.
Yeah, right.
We try really hard to still tell you things that we just don't think are working or that came out of the press launch where we go, wait. We'll get together after the briefing and look at each other and be like, wait a minute, they said that, but doesn't it mean this?
Yeah, right.
Haven't they completely forgotten this obvious glaring reality? We have to mention that because you've got to be careful. I understand that a lot of people, especially the lifestyle folks, will just be like, this car is amazing because they got a free trip. We're very cautious of that because we know it exists, but we don't want to do it.
I agree with that. You and I have always told ourselves from the very beginning, we want to be fair and honest and inform and entertain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that comes across in things we don't like, but we acknowledge, hey, the buyer that this car is going for, they might like that, whatever that is. But you're absolutely right. You know, we want to acknowledge that we're there, but also really come away with a fair assessment. And I think in doing so, the manufacturers appreciate that more.
Hopefully.
Thomas Downey is visiting Hawaii in a couple months. That sounds great. Wants to rent something fun on Turo for cruising around the island. Is Miata the answer? I've got to agree with Ross Ballot. I don't think Miata is the answer here.
Yeah, Ross is one of our writers. This is a really good answer, actually.
He is. I think it is the Wrangler. Ross says Wrangler, mm-hmm. and I agree, because of maybe a little bit of unexplored area, but more so, you want to get this thing dirty and not care. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great.
And pay the cleaning fee. Just pay the extra cleaning fee and be done with it. But you want to get it dirty. You're going to bounce around on the sand. You're going to bounce around on dirt and rocks and mud. And you just want to get in and out and just enjoy life and go exploring. Not, I got to, you know, keep it clean. Plus, there's not that many good driving roads in Hawaii. There's one or two real good ones, but for the most part, it's not like a, you know, driver's paradise.
True.
It's a paradise in a whole other category.
I'll go you one better. I was actually on a shoot. This is 10, 15 years ago. I was actually on a shoot. I was being paid as a cameraman to be in Hawaii. I know, terrible day. We wound up on Kauai, and I wound up driving.
What am I doing here?
Seriously. I wound up driving some people around in a Wrangler with only the bikini top thing that just right above your head.
Sure.
Everything else was off this thing. Over the course of driving for the shoot, we drove on the freeway where, of course, it was crazy. We drove down to weird beaches in the middle of nowhere that were down terrible roads. Wrangler was perfect. We drove while it was raining, and now it's sunny again. It was just because it's that constant room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's getting wet. You don't care.
Yeah.
Wrangler's awesome for this.
Yeah, I agree. There's a last question on here from Felipe Rodriguez, who asks, if we are in Germany, would we consider doing a car gathering or fan meeting day? We would absolutely consider that. We will let you know and keep you posted. We've done it before, as Todd says, at the Meat Room.
Yes.
M-E-A-T.
We had a meet up at the Meat Room in Frankfurt. Yeah, we'd love to do it again.
In Frankfurt.
It'd be cool.
We'll do something like that for sure. Guys, thank you so much for all your questions. Really appreciate it. Keep asking, because we will continue to get to them. And please send all your debates, your car conclusions, and your topic Tuesdays to Everyday Driver TV. @gmail.com.
And save up the crazy questions, because I'm telling you again, Friday's podcast is 4 p.m. for us. It's 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. We are taking all questions of all kinds.
Ooh,
bring it. Podcast 500.
Every 500 podcasts, we just do any questions,
Every 500.
Thanks, guys, so much. Cheers, everyone.